Welcome to the Legal Moves Podcast. My name is Zachary Strubeck. I am your host for the show, and I am a California game lawyer. Today, I have a great guest who runs his mobile and PC game company out of Finland. Welcome to Axel Jonkila. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's close enough, at least. Axel, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, your company, and your games?
All right. So, first of all, our company is called BugBite, and we've been operating for close to 4 years now. And it all started with me and my little brother. My studies were just finished, and I pretty much had no idea what I wanted to do. I had been studying computer science, but it never really felt like it was my thing. So I didn't know what I was about to do. And then my little brother, his job contract was just ending, and he had made some games on his free time. And he just asked me, you want to make games? And I was like, sure, why not? So that's how it started. And we've been playing PC games all our lives, and even the first Nintendo when it came out. So it felt like it could be fun. So then we just created a company here in Finland, and we got our first grant that you can get here in Finland, and it's called like a starting money, and you can get it for a half year or maybe even a year, depends. And it was like maybe 700-800 euros a month. Okay. And that's how we went for half a year and created our first game in 9 to 10 months, released that on Android, and we got a lot of downloads, but we got no money. So
what was the name of the game?
It was called Dare Dogs. Okay. And it was a game where there were dog characters flying around and competing in a tournament, and then we had even a story where the main dog character's father had died in a previous tournament, and he was to avenge his father against the reigning champion of that tournament. So that was the game, and yeah, it was, looking back, it was like trying out things and seeing how everything works. So, but surprisingly,
let me ask you. I guess yeah. We're sort of borrowing questions from later that I was going to ask, so I might as well ask them while we're talking about this. Yeah. Did you expect a lot of success with this first game, or were you sort of prepared that you had no idea whether it was going to be successful or not?
Yeah, like we had no idea what would happen. We just had like dreams, and I think many starting game developers do the same mistake of looking at the App Store, and they look at simple games and see that they might have some hundred thousands of downloads or even over a million. And you just tend to start thinking, oh, well, maybe they made a lot of money with these games, maybe like 50 cents per download or something. I mean, that doesn't sound too much. And so that's how you start hoping. And then you might even think, well, wow, we got better graphics than these guys, and they have got over a million downloads. We will probably also get it. And so you just hope, and then you release the game, and then reality hits, and it's like, oh, yeah, it was nothing like that.
Well, I mean, most of the success of a lot of these small games is just, I don't know, they just seem to catch fire, and there's no real reason why, right? Like something like Flappy Bird, which was almost exactly like this other game that had cactuses, right? So why did Flappy Bird take off, but the cactus game didn't? It's just, don't know, it just seems to go out on social media, and people start sharing it, and it becomes popular. Or it just gets featured in the App Store or something, and you can never really predict that, right?
Yeah, well, Flappy Bird is an anomaly, really. Right. I mean, It was out already like a half a year or something, and it, you know, it didn't catch any fire. And then all of a sudden it started, and I don't know what happened there. There's rumors around the internet that they used some kind of bot network to get it up on the list. But then, for sure, when it did get visibility, it somehow appealed to a lot of YouTubers and such to get even more fire. Yeah,
it's crazy. Well, and I mean, you could argue that with so many games on the App Store, I mean, every day there's what, hundreds or something that are new games that are going up. Any success is an anomaly, right? Any game that's actually successful, which is it's crazy to think about. But I think when you plan your company, and I don't know if you did when you were in the planning stages, plan for this failure, right? It's almost something you have to do.
Yeah, I think many just like us just have that dream of getting a successful game, and then you don't pretty much think about anything else. I mean, you just make the game and you hope, and then see what happens.
Yeah, it's difficult. When you got funding, so the funding that you got was through the government, correct?
Yeah.
Finland?
Yeah.
Do you have to, what are the terms like for that? Do you need to do anything for them or advertise for them or anything like that?
Finland is pretty great in many, especially in these things. And well, first to get that small grant, you have to create a company and then you have to present your idea and how you're going to make money and how you're going to employ people. That's essentially the most important thing to the government, that at some point you employ people. So if you have a plan to make that happen, they usually listen. And the first start money to get that, it's pretty easy. And but they usually run out of that money at some point of the year. So they can't give it to everyone.
You have to get in maybe earlier in the year is better. Is it an annual thing where they re-up their budget every year?
Yes, and it also depends on in which field you go into. Especially when we started, the gaming industry was like really hot. So you had a better chance to get for that than for something else.
Okay. Is there like a second level of funding after you do this initial stage of development? I know I've been looking into other countries, and for instance, I think Denmark has sort of a seed funding part, and then they have a second one where they'll give you a lot more when you actually want to move into development. So they help you develop the idea first, but then they actually help you develop the game with a lot more money. Is there something like that? Or is it just...
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
That's just like the start, the 6 months. And then there are different organizations that work for the government, and they specialize in trying to get the good companies and the good ideas and giving them the funding they need to get the thing started. Mm-hmm. So there's Tekes, for example. We've had funding through them, but then there's also an organization called ELY, and we had a funding through them also. So you have like a lot of chances here in Finland to get funding. And then, you know, the really big boys like Supercell and these have a chance to get even like over $1 million from Tekes to realize their plan.
Right. Is it because they've proven that they can make money before? And so now, do they get a return on their investment, or is it just a grant that you don't have to pay back or give royalties or anything?
They have different, they have a grant, and then they have also loans that are like for the company only, so you don't have to pay it back as a private person. They can give out those, and Tekes wants that you employ people again. That's the important thing, and that, you know, ideas that makes money come from out of Finland to Finland is what they want. That's what they want. So that's why they help.
Okay, very cool. So after Dare Dogs, what happened?
Well, yeah, we looked at the stats, and then we just felt like we just got started, you know. Right. At the beginning, you think 1 year is a lot of time, but then you realize when you make the game, it's not at all a lot of time. So we just made one game, and it was like, hey, we can't give up now. So then we started looking into these different fundings and grants, and you always have to have your own money as well. So it's not like 100%. So it's usually 50%. So you have to have half of the money yourself. And then we got a chance to get into a business incubator and get a grant related to that. So we took a loan and we applied to the business incubator, and we got in and we got the grant. And then we just started making our next game, which was also it was like a continuation of this. Okay. This first game, we just we made a mistake there also. We looked at Jetpack Joyride, and yeah, they had a lot of downloads, and it was a simple game, so we thought, let's make a simple game, you know, a side scroller, Infinity Runner, and mm-hmm. and we will get millions of downloads, and we can monetize that. And okay. and yeah, that project was quite a nightmare. We wanted to get like a publisher, like a deal, mm-hmm. also to it, get help in the start. So then there was a little bit trouble with it. It started to take a lot of time to get them on board. So it ended up taking like 1 year and like 2 to 3 months even to get this game out. And then we got it out, and it wasn't like the same type of success that the first game, like nothing. So
you're getting a lot of downloads, but there's no money coming through from it. Is that?
Yeah.
Now, is it because you're not building monetization into the game right away, or is it maybe you're thinking that players are going to be buying a lot of in-app purchases and they're just not? Is that the?
Yeah. Well, we tried. We tried with the.
Yeah.
You read online how you can make, you know, in-app purchases work, you know, what you should put in the game and so on. And,
everyone's got their ideas, but
yeah,
do they work?
Exactly. And first of all, the genre, the Infinity Runners, they're probably the most hard games to monetize, like almost impossible.
Right.
So I guess Crossy Road has succeeded really well, but to do it takes a lot.
Yes.
So that's one of the reasons. The genre, it just appeals to a certain group of players that don't want to buy anything. So that's the problem there.
Yeah.
And then also, if you want to do this right, you have to have a lot of resources. You have to do soft launches and test and iterate and test and this
you,
kind
you
of stuff.
Launch in Canada or the Philippines or something like that, right? You're doing launches in different countries before you hit your target country where you think you're going to make money.
Yeah. And there's a developer here from Tribeclaim. He said that it takes like at least 100,000 to test these things. And I agree, you know, you have to get enough purchases so that you can actually rely on that data you get. So, right. And now the user acquisition is so sky high that it's not in any way, shape or form viable for an indie company to do any of this stuff. It's just, if they make a free-to-play game, it's like playing Lotto, you know, like,
right.
it's not viable. Let's just say that.
You're competing now against these huge companies that have a ton of marketing money behind them. And, you know, how do you get your game to be seen when you got, I don't know, companies with Kate Upton in their commercials and you know, at the Super Bowl and all that? I mean, how do you compete with that?
Yeah, exactly. You don't. And you can only put your game out there and hope it's a Flappy Bird.
Right. Well, so when did you start to find success? So after this game, it kind of didn't work out. What direction did your company take after that?
We changed the genre completely, and it was my little brother had this game in his head, just this simple kind of tower defense game set in space. Mm-hmm. And he made a prototype in like 2 weeks, and we just decided to put it out there, you know, like in two to four weeks it was out there from. And we didn't market it in any special ways, and we didn't get a lot of downloads to it, but we noticed that it was like, it was monetizing. It was our first game that was actually monetizing, I can't remember exactly, but 10 to 100 times better than our previous games. Mm. So that was like the first indication that there could be something here now, that if we get downloads to this game, it should monetize now. So we continued on that.
What was the name of that game? We should talk about the name.
It was just called Battle Station. Mm-hmm. You know, that was it. And it's a game where you have a battle station in space, and it's a big battle station, and you build turrets on it, and then aliens come to Earth, and you have to take them down. And we continued on that, and we developed the idea further and put some time into it. And I think it was only like 4 months, mm-hmm. and we had that new battle station called Battle Station First Contact out. And so we put that out, and we got downloads to it, and it was the first game that made some money actually to us, and made enough for us to continue to at least apply for a new grant. Right. And so on. So yeah. We used that money then. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you. So the first battle station, what is it that you think, what about the game kept players in and helped to monetize it? Was it just that you had players playing longer, and they, or were there more interesting purchases in the app, or what do you think it was?
We used this old school monetization kind of shareware. Like,
okay,
there were one episode for free, and then the rest you pay a one-time sum, and then you get them unlocked. So it was that combined with, you know, just the how addictive the game is. I mean, it's surprising, but even when I played it, I hadn't played it. He just made it in a couple of weeks, and then he showed it to me, and I started playing in it, and I just realized that, oh, wow, this is like addictive.
Right.
You know, I want to try again because I died, but then I want to try again. What can I do differently? And it just worked really well. And it was like, it's a tower defense game, but it's special in a way. You just have one tower. So you just focus on that one tower and make that tower the best you can. And if you make it optimally, you can like get through the game and so on. And those were the reasons, I would say. And that's what we have continued on now. And it's just looking better and better every new update and game we make.
Very good. Your latest game is, I mean, I bought it off the App Store for, I think, $4 US.
Yeah.
So is that your new model? You think you've progressed to the point where you just will charge for a full game outright?
Yeah, that's our model, and our players really like it. It's finally something different than the free to play that they are really they don't like that. They don't like free to play games and having to pay to win and this stuff. So it's really refreshing for them.
Yeah,
but it does mean that we're catering like a niche group of players, but I think it's our best chance to grow further and right. and just yeah.
Well, it's an interesting question because you have big companies like Supercell and them, and their model relies on them getting a ton of downloads and monetizing those downloads. But when you're not really shooting for millions and millions of dollars a month, right? You're just shooting yeah. for a modest income that allows you to keep developing and have some success. Going for a niche genre, I think, is not necessarily a bad idea. Right, because you get people that are really passionate about those type of games.
Yes, yeah, and it really shows. It really shows in the comments we get, and like we've gotten multiple like people giving us analysis of our game, mm-hmm. and it's like many pages of text and even like Excel sheets uh-huh. of how the turrets are balanced and how they're balanced wrong and everything. Oh, and wow. It's just like mind blowing, you know, like they actually write many pages of text to send us.
Right.
So that's
great. That's, right. Those are serious. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Exactly. And,
cool.
Now we can use, like we can make our games together with them because, we are making the games for them. So it's good to know what they want and just right. kind of follow that voice there.
I find that the similar thing is true with board games. A lot of board games are transitioning to digital versions of the games. And in those, you can get away with charging up front for the game because there's probably not a huge amount of in-app purchases that they can do. And B, you mm-hmm. have people who are serious and really just want a digital version of a great game that they love. So they're willing to pay that $5 yeah. or $7 or whatever it costs, right? Just to have that game with them all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to know your audience first, I think is important, right?
It is. It is really important. And it's something probably a lot of game developers forget. I mean, I know it's possible to make games in a way that you just dream of a game and then you make it and then it happens to appeal to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But then I also believe there's another way, and that's actually listening to the customers and the community that you have
right.
and then trying to make the perfect game for them. And then I believe it will hit off in a bigger way.
What's it? It's a question of resources. If you have the resources to sort of make a bunch of smaller games and hope that, and with the risk that maybe only one of them will be successful, that's yeah. fine. But if you have limited resources and you really have to make a game that's going to make you some money, you really yeah. need to research your audience first, I think. It's definitely.
Yeah, that, it's so expensive to make games. Right. So the sooner you know if your game idea is good or not, and there's a lot of things these days. It's not enough to have a good game. You have to have a game that you can market well, and that's really important these days. If the game is just not somehow has that kind of specialty that at this time point is something that people want and they see it and they're like, wow, this is something new and cool. Yeah. If it's not that, it's gonna be so much harder to get any sales. It's just because there are so many games out there. So
absolutely. So you would recommend maybe taking a genre that already exists and putting your own spin on it or something unique, right? You can't just make a new tactical game with a bunch of cartoon characters that look all the same as the other ones, right? You should do something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You see so many very similar looking games in the App Store and it's hard to tell them apart.
Well, that's one yeah. you know, bad thing. If you can't tell your game apart from other games, that's right. one bad thing. And but you just somehow have to get those players, enough players to play your game, and if they're not excited, if they don't stick and if they don't give feedback, mm-hmm. that's a sign right there that what you dreamt of isn't necessarily any good, and then you have to be able to kill it and try something else.
Sure.
And you just have to find ways how to do this as fast as you can, because if you spend a year making a game and then you realize, okay, no one's interested in this, and then it doesn't help that you try to yell, I spent a year on this, please play my game.
No one cares, right?
No one cares. Yeah. Like, it's so brutal.
Right.
No one really cares. Right. Yeah.
Well, there's an idea for startups. It's called the lean startup or 7-day startup, or, you know, there's tons of different ways to say it. But basically, you're making the minimum viable product, right? The smallest thing you could possibly make to get out to the audience. And then you start iterating on that. And it sounds like you're sort of saying the same thing for mobile. It's a good way to go.
Well, yeah, it worked for us. So
I'm sure it works for lots of developers, and it's really when you think about it, it's really the only way to go unless you have big investment coming in, because you need to get that idea out there and see if it's even viable first.
Yes.
Now, do you have any other? Well, actually, let me ask you. Go back to you talked about the business accelerator you were involved in. Did you get anything out of that? Maybe being around other small businesses or startups, or like mentorship or anything like that. What sort of benefits did you get from them?
Probably one of the most important was the networking. That you just meet other people from other industries, but then more importantly from the game industry and other gaming companies, and if you can meet more experienced game developers, that's like huge.
Yeah.
Just asking them and they will tell you what you're already doing wrong.
Yes.
Because they have done the same.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's one of the most, one of the best things that we got out of it. And then also just having people around and having like a bigger workplace to come to and doing things together and having this community there is really helpful. So I really recommend those. And it's, you know, game developers are, at least here in Finland, usually pretty shy and keep to themselves, and that's probably not good.
I think that's game developers in general. I think are usually pretty shy and kind of keep themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I force myself to go to an office, even though I'm traveling everywhere. I go to an office if I want to work or just to be around other people who are working. And you sort of get a different vibe. And I work a lot better around other people who are working.
Yes, same thing for me.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, regarding marketing your game, do you do any marketing besides just sort of putting it on the app stores, or I don't know, do you go to game conventions? Do you do advertising, anything like that?
My marketing is something we have focused on a lot, and of course it's really essential if you wanna make it, you wanna be successful. So we've had featurings from both Google and Apple, and I've done my own kind of marketing. I've succeeded in various things. So I write on Gamasutra, and also had some successful posts on Reddit. Kind of been a little bit of a phenom there.
That's great. No, those are two great places. That's where I get a lot of clients, because I'm on the Sutra and I, you know, go on Reddit and I don't know, they're there. The gamers are there, right?
Yes. And then YouTubers. Almost impossible with mobile games to get any kind of YouTuber to play your game. Mm-hmm. But with our newest game, we actually succeeded. And then was this one YouTuber who had over a 100,000 subscribers, which is kind of good. And he was just flying to, I guess it was PAX, and he just happened to grab this game on his flight, and he played it. And then after that, he had to make a video because he liked it so much. So, I have to say it's almost impossible with mobile games. And if you have some kind of infinite runner, it's... Don't even bother. I mean, they hate mobile games. It's like it's unfortunate, but you know, these PC gamers and YouTubers, they're like, they just have this idea that all mobile is crap, right, and there's nothing good there. So, and I don't blame them, you know.
Well, there's a ton of crap. there's yeah, very few good things, really. That yeah, are, you know.
And it's yeah, just how the market works on mobile, that yep, you have to have these really mass appealing games to get on the top lists. And if you don't get on those top lists, you won't get any downloads. And so everything revolves around that. And that's why it's so hard to find niche and more complex games on mobile, because big companies won't make money on those. So they just focus on the mass appealing games, and that's why all of those are at the top lists, and it's hard to find anything else.
Yeah, but that leaves certain genres wide open for smaller companies, right?
Yes, yeah, and that's what I'm. And I would also recommend going to PC, like have at least PC as one of the platforms, because that's what we're doing, and it's for a reason, you know.
So you have Battle Station Harbinger coming onto PC soon. When will it be out on PC?
It will be Q1 2016. So okay, we planned either January or February next year. So it's not long.
What would you say are the major differences? Obviously, we talked about the mobile market and just the usual mobile audience. You think the PC audience is a little more, I guess, hardcore, for lack of a better word. Yeah, and then they're better equipped to handle these more serious games. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, we have some problems with our game, lacking a bit of depth in some departments. Okay. So we're going to try to focus on those weaknesses and make it the best it can be on PC. But yeah, it's quite hard, because on mobile the game has to be a little bit more simpler, because you don't have the mouse and you don't have the keyboard. So you have to work around those things. But I believe in our game, and it's really like the players we have on mobile, they are more hardcore players. And it's just, even many PC players would be surprised when they play this game that it has so much depth that it has. So it will be a little bit of struggle to convince them. That's not good, but we're going to try. Yeah.
I need it. I think even the mobile one is too much for me. I think I lost like 3 or 4 times on the second level of Harbinger. So I'm pretty awful. I need to get back.
Yeah. Well, it's the type of game where you die a lot, and then that one time when you do win, it will feel a lot better, you know.
Right. Yeah. What do you do about working with your audience? Is there a community, like a forum that you have on your website, or do you do a lot of outreach with them and discussion with them?
Yeah, like I've personally been like in contact with them, and I pretty much read everything they write, and and we have our own forum, and we take feedback, we take like feature suggestions, and actually we made a Kickstarter which was based on these feature suggestions, and it was a successful Kickstarter. So, and that's how Harbinger now will evolve. Like it's based on those feedbacks we got, and it's already proving it's gotten a lot better, the game. So it looks like it's working, this method, release.
Very good. Now, how do you balance, because the audiences will also give very bad suggestions at the same time, because they're not necessarily developers. So how do you balance? I guess everything goes through a filter of you and your brother and the rest of the company.
Yeah, so we discuss these things, and we are the gatekeepers. Right. We take these suggestions, and you can often see that they don't think in a more bigger scale, the players. They just think of one feature, but they don't think how it affects everything else.
Yeah,
So we can see that right away, and then we just have to say, no, this isn't possible, and or maybe this takes too much time to make, and it won't give anything to the game, really, in our mind. So we just pick the ones that are, like, also in our mind, and considering the resources we have, really, really good and viable, and then we do those. So that's how we work.
Very good. But are you always iterating with new ideas and things and adding them into the game, or do you have maybe our new content releases sort of spread out even further?
Previously we have updated quite often, but with this Harbinger we work like 3 months before we updated it from the start, from the release. So we have just now, last week Friday, we released a big, like a huge content update on Google, and it will be live this week on Apple. So it has a lot of new stuff, and it looks like a totally different game, and it's like this probably kind of shocking type of thing for players that they suddenly update, and it's like, wow, there's so much new in this, and
right. And
then we just hope that they like it, like the game still.
Okay, that's a good thing, though. Yeah. I think.
Keeping
it fresh, right?
As long as it's, you know, viable business-wise, that's the thing.
Yes. Well, I guess if something doesn't work, then you can roll it back, right? If it really pisses off the audience.
Yeah, it's a possibility, yeah.
Yes.
But
so you mentioned the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store. How has it been working with those two platforms?
Well, the Google Play is really... I like it, or we like it, because it's so fast. It's like 2 hours and you get the update there, and you can... If something is wrong, you know, you can fix it fast, and 2 hours again, and it's fixed. So that's what I really like about Google, and also their user interface overall is better than Apple, I have to say. And the biggest thing with Apple is the review process, and that it can take even 2 weeks to get an update through, and sometimes if you're really unlucky, you know, 7 to 10 days goes by, and then you get the notification that there's something wrong with your build. So
now you've just wasted a week, right?
Yeah, and then you have to fix that and put it in again, and hopefully this time it will go through. So there's like 2 to 4 weeks is something you have to take into consideration with Apple, that, and when time is so limited, otherwise also 2 to 4 weeks can be a lot of time, and that's usually why the Google version is so much further ahead all the time, and maybe the fans, you know, start getting pissed off that, hey, why is this Apple always the last to come, and the Google players get the new content first. So
it's funny because you usually hear it the other way around, that Apple always gets the games first, and the Google is sort of, all the apps are behind and they're not as good looking and all that sort of stuff. But that's probably because the developers are targeting Apple first.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Do you find that your audience is more on Android devices? Or
we have a premium game, we have more success on Google than Apple, and I don't know why that is, but on Google Play we are constantly in the top 20 in strategy games, and on Apple we aren't really anywhere. So I hope that will change now with the update and the updated marketing materials and so on. But it's just how the app stores work differently. But yeah, Google Play has been more successful for us.
That's interesting because, again, like in a lot of the reports that you get, you see that customers are spending a lot more money on Apple, on the App Store, than with the Android. But I guess, I don't know, maybe that's taking into account you know, places like China, or places where they have like a ton of really cheap Android devices that people, it counts as Android, but people aren't going to buy them anyway. So when you line up the same types of people, types of gamers, I guess, that are using Android devices versus Apple devices, maybe the spending is similar. I don't know.
That sounds reasonable. It can be.
Because there's just so many cheap Android phones out there. And when you count them as users of the Google Play Store, or, you know, it's going to bring down the average a lot.
Yes, that's true. True, yeah. Mm.
Okay. Yeah, and you'll find that even on the legal side, like let's say you have an infringing game, a game that's cloned your game, and you want to get it taken down. The process is so much faster on Google than it is with Apple. Apple doesn't seem to be too concerned with that, I guess, because they have the power, right? they can do what they want. Yeah,
but we don't like
Apple. We both love Apple, of course. But
yes, of course.
I use Apple products. I'm recording this on MacBook. So all right. Well, that's very interesting. That's going to wrap this up, I guess. That's all my questions. But thank you again for coming on, Axel.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. My pleasure.
I had a great time. So where can the listeners find you, and where can they find your games?
Just go to battlestation.fi, and that's where you find.
Okay. I'll make it in the show notes as well. How about Twitter? Do you do anything on Twitter?
Yeah, we have at battlestationpc.
Okay.
That's our Twitter.
Very good. And so, you can find the games on, it's Bugbyte, B-Y-T-E, just in case people want to search on the Apple App Store, the Google Play Store, or coming soon to Steam, right?
Yes, and probably if they search for Battle Station, we should be up there
in the first place.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. And for me, you can find me at gamelawyerblog.com. You can read more about legal aspects of game development. And make sure to help us out and put a review on iTunes. Just put 5 stars on there and you don't have to type anything. Just make it easy for you. And lastly, check out patreon.com/legalmoves to donate to the Patreon campaign and help to upgrade the show with video and other awesome stuff.